Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, after the Terry affair, England face African champs at Wembley. We review Egypt's performance and his England teammates too. We round up the other midweek friendly scores that matter. As Spain leave Dominic seeing stars, and Maradona gives the critics something else to stick up their bum. Unless they're ladies. Man United, it's Red Knights' move after Glazer's Bishop, but can they produce the big check? There's FA Cup Round 6 action, the weekend in the Premier League, violence in Paris, cussing in Italy and post hundreds of the buggers, all in today's Super Soreway Football Weekly Extra. Welcome back, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Great to have you back on board.
It's great to be back on board.
I bet it is. So what have you been doing with your time off?
Well, I had to take some holidays or I was going to lose them, so I sort of holidayed at home.
And staycation?
A staycation, I believe it's called, yeah. So I watched lots of DVDs, slept a lot, read some books, brought my mother to Madame Tussauds, where she's always wanted to go. I think she was a bit underwhelmed, although she did comment that Steven Gerrard's wax model looks very like himself, which it does, compared to others who don't look quite like themselves.
So, fascinating.
Yeah, and I went to the Tate Gallery and I went to a play.
Kevin McCarra.
I think my cultural life's been impoverished by comparison with Barry.
Wow, indeed.
Go to football games, watching football on TV, there's no end to it.
Yeah, and indeed, Paul Doyle.
Hi, James.
Hi to you. And, off we go then with today. And first up on the Football Weekly Extra agenda, England, a 3-1 win against the African champions. But the public not impressed. I haven't seen anything so underwhelmed, in fact, since I looked up whelp in the dictionary.
Yeah, excuses, first of all. I think when it comes in between Champions League fixtures and a League Cup final, I wasn't expecting to be thrilled, and I wasn't.
Right.
I think the great tactical innovation was getting stuck in the second half. I'm glad that Fabio Capello's adapted to our ways rather than us adapting to his. You know, it's a way ahead.
But it's a 3-1 win against the African champions.
It is. However, let's also remember it's an offside goal for the third goal, and the second goal is just an absurd piece of goalkeeping. So I think it flattered England. It is true that they got on top in the second half, but it lacked interest because Capello, we kind of fantasised he might experiment in some way or do something different, but his aim was just to pick the team more or less that he wants to play and give them more time together. So there was nothing particularly adventurous. We saw the return of Walcott, but that was basically because of Aaron Lennon's injury, of course.
Yeah, indeed. And not that impressive, the return of Walcott. What conclusions will Capello have drawn?
I think Walcott's probably fireproof. Sanchez getting some games for Arsenal because speed is not a great attribute of the team. Lennon's got it, Walcott's got it, and I think you need that in tournaments, breakaway goals and seizing chances like that, and I think he still has hopes of Walcott, but he obviously, as I do agree, is much diminished since the hat-trick in Zagreb.
Yeah, indeed. Plenty of people posting in with lessons for England. Hat and Bomb, top Egyptian fan. Among the many mentioned that Defoe and Rooney should never start together because they just don't score.
Actually, that was the one experiment, wasn't it? Defoe playing. Yeah. You thought, yeah, he's better in the last 20 minutes when defences are tiring and you can maybe release him and get a shot on goal, but he's not going to lead the line in any sense.
Yeah. Mowgli 84, England struggling. No Emil Heskey. Jermaine Defoe hardly touching the ball. When will you kids learn? Was it a victory for Emil Heskey last night, was it?
Yeah, good game not to play in.
Yeah, but I
think yes, it was fantastic in the qualifiers that Rooney could play off Heskey and score all these goals. But to imagine that simple one policy is going to work throughout the World Cup is fanciful. And I imagine Capello does have to try and vary it. I think it's a bit kind of predictable. And better teams, for example, someone like Lucio playing for Brazil would probably stop the Heskey-Rooney combination from working.
Mm. And what about the rejigged backline, or at least the insertion of Leighton Baines?
It could have been worse. I mean, the fact that he gave him the whole game was noteworthy because Warnock didn't enjoy that luxury when he played under Capello. I'm sure Capello's still crossing his fingers that, as everyone predicts, Ashley Cole is going to be back. And some people think he'll be back in fairly good time for the World Cup. But you can't rule out the possibility of a setback. And it does seem like Leighton Baines is the player he favours over Warnock. And if you saw Warnock lunging in the League Cup final at the weekend, you saw a rashness here that would not appeal to Capello in the slightest.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Barry,
Yes, the game, it reminded me sort of like a latter-day Rolling Stones gig where, because he's so old, Mick Jagger, he doesn't really pull out all the stops and start busting his moves till the last couple of songs. And it sends the audience home thinking, wow, what an energetic and great performance it was by Jagger. But I think England fans should not forget how abject they were in the first half, and they really were terrible. But, you know, it was a good overall performance, and they won comfortably enough in the end.
I should make you a note to make a really blinding part three.
Yeah, exactly.
Paul, did you catch the excitement at Wembley? No, because you...
I did, yes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh. What day did you go to Loftus Road then?
That was yesterday.
It was a 2 o'clock kickoff in the afternoon.
That's bizarre.
Yeah, so I was able to...
So you went to see South Korea take on Ivory Coast at 2 o'clock in the afternoon at Loftus Road.
Yeah.
Hard to get a ticket, I imagine, was it? And any good?
Yeah, well, it was a very interesting match, actually.
Who won?
It was 2-0 to Korea, and Korea were a lot better than I expected, and a lot better than their fans and journalists expected beforehand, if what they were saying to me is anything to go by. They were as dynamic and well-drilled as we've come to expect Korean teams to be ever since 2002. They're now managed by the guy, actually, who was their manager before Hiddink took charge in 2002, and they've gone back to him now. He was a bit of a failure beforehand, but they've gone back to him, and he's retained all the qualities that Hiddink instilled, and as well as, you know, this sort of stereotypical work ethic and everything, there was real intelligence and in their movement, and that contrasted starkly with the Ivory Coast, who were very lethargic throughout. I mean, we know it's their camp is riven by various conflicts, which they tried to resolve beforehand, and they had a big group therapy session on Tuesday. But it was apparent that hasn't been resolved.
Who's fallen out with who in the Ivory Coast?
I don't know. There's so many of them that I don't know who is and isn't getting on with each other. But there's lots of different clans, apparently, is what one of the players said to me after the game yesterday. And
but South Korea, so are you kind of thinking that they might be realistic contenders for qualifying out of their group?
That is the...
They're in Argentina's group.
They are, yeah. Nigeria are the other team in their group. It's one of the reasons why they wanted to play the Ivory Coast. They figured that they're similar to Nigeria in an African kind of way.
Right.
That is how these things work. And the other team in the group is Greece, I believe. So they didn't have high hopes, but this performance, and they've got some other big friendlies before the World Cup. They're playing Spain now, most notably, and so this will have given them a boost, certainly.
Excellent. I'm sure our South Korean fan listeners will be delighted by that in-depth report. You weren't the only interested observer, though, at Loftus Road, were you?
No. Well, Dunga was there, obviously, as were the entire Brazilian media.
Because Ivory Coast are
In Brazil's group, yeah, right. And having been in London on Tuesday for their friendly against the Republic of Ireland, they hung around. And there was a veritable glitterati of managers
including
the Hiddink? Hiddink wasn't there. He's the man who everyone thinks is going to take charge of Ivory Coast ahead of the World Cup. The players were a bit non-committal about that afterwards, but if the glint in their eye was anything to go by, they do seem to think that he will be on board. But Sven
just signed
was there.
For,
Sven,
just on the Hiddink front, he signed for Turkey, but they're not going to meet the World Cup.
Exactly, so they think they might be able to persuade him to do a little stint, which is a nice gig if you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
Vahid Halilhodžić, who was the manager of Ivory Coast until after the African Nations Cup, he's a very embittered man. They were knocked out in the quarterfinals in the African Nations Cup, obviously, by Algeria. Didn't perform well throughout, but he only lost one of the 24 matches in which he was in charge, and he considers it very unfair that he was sacked out of the blue. He says he just got a fax on Saturday morning saying, "Yeah, you've been sacked," with no explanation, and he's threatening. And he's threatening to pursue the matter in some way. But he has come out now and now lifted the lid on various rivalries within the team and all sorts of things. He said that the team fell sick even on the morning of the match against Algeria, but no one told him. So all these players insisted on going out and playing despite being very sick.
Now, as Paul was mentioning, Dunga was in London. For the friendly against Ireland. Not very impressive, Brazil, apparently.
I disagree. I mean, I'm fed up hearing this, but Brazil, though, they play two holding midfield players. It's dull. As if they've got the sole responsibility in the world to entertain. Anyway, they do entertain. Their second goal was absolutely magnificent against Ireland. I only watched it on TV, but it was a brilliant goal. Great passing movement, great finish by Robinho. He didn't quite do that at Man City, did he? It's funny, strange, inexplicable.
Well, there were flashes of it. Yeah. Chuck Schick agreeing with you. Quoting Rob Smythe, as Rob Smythe put it so bloody brilliantly last week, says Chuck Schick, the greatest trick Brazil ever pulled was convincing the world that Joga Bonito exists. Brazil haven't played like Brazil, in inverted commas, since 1982. In fact, says Chuck Schick, looking at them over the past decade, you could say, with a few exceptions, that they're a team of midfielders. The big, slow midfielders defend, the tall, quick ones go and attack.
I agree entirely. I think Brazil were like fantastic in 70 and 82, but often they are tough professionals. These are people who have really struggled to get from various difficult backgrounds to the top, and they're not sort of sentimental artists. I mean, they're going to beat you. That's their main concept.
All right, then, speaking of sentimental artists, Scotland, victory.
Alas.
But yes. Craig Levein.
Our first friendly win at Hampden since 1996.
Yes.
I mean, couldn't we have invited Andorra? Mind you, they probably have held us to a 1-1 all draw. I felt very sentimental about this because, or it's the Czech Republic, but it reminded me of 1973 when Scotland qualified the World Cup for the first time since the year of my birth, 58, by beating Czechoslovakia 2-1. And an unknown Leeds United player, a reserve called Joe Jordan, scored the winner. But that was the beginning of Scotland qualifying for 6 World Cups out of 7. And of course, nowadays, if we beat anyone, it's a miracle. I think Craig Levein, the new manager, is a good choice. I'm amazed that he failed so badly at Leicester. He's a hard man and an intelligent guy. And I think Scotland couldn't do any better in the appointment. Unfortunately, although we're playing Czech Republic in a friendly, we're also playing them in the qualifiers. You don't normally play people in friendlies before meeting them in serious actions.
Well, it's a good practice, of course.
I'm surprised that both teams were willing to do that. I guess Czech Republic are not worried.
Maybe it was arranged before the draw.
Well, exactly. I mean, but no, sometimes things get cancelled, you know,
on that basis. That's true. Oh, what about Celtic? We failed to mention, in typical fashion, the Old Firm
game
last week.
Yeah.
Another defeat for Celtic against Rangers. Flawed Genius posting in with a link to the banner, which... disgruntled Celtic fans unfurled during the game, addressed to Tony Mowbray, and it said, at least John Barnes could rap.
The board would like to keep Tony Mowbray because it's expensive for him to go, but I think the season ticket sales will collapse if he stays. Yeah. The other thing about it is I think he's signed some really good players, considering how cheap they were, and yet he cannot bring them together as a team or get any spirit or organisation. Maybe Tony Mowbray's meant to be a general manager who goes around bringing in players rather than coaching them. Trouble is, he thinks that he has some master plan as coaching, and his coaching normally produces attractive teams, as West Brom fans will tell you, who concede too many goals and are vulnerable, and that's exactly the same at Celtic.
No. Barry, have you the stomach for some more midweek international friendly news?
I love international friendlies.
All right. Tell us a little bit about the very, very impressive victory of Maradona's Argentina in Munich over Germany.
Yeah, well, that was a scrappy, occasionally fractious game, which Argentina won 1-0 with a goal from Gonzalo Higuain.
A great goal as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was a catastrophic error by the German goalkeeper, René Adler, who charged off his line out of his penalty area and up towards the centre circle to intercept a long ball over the top and missed it, or had it tipped away from him, and Higuain just passed it into an empty net. And Adler had a shocker last night, which was unfortunate for him because he had been told, you know, you are our number one keeper, the position is yours to lose between now and the World Cup. So he let in that goal. He was at fault. He was at fault, or could have been at fault, for two more, and just generally didn't play well. So Manuel Neuer, who's his rival for the number one shirt in Germany, will have been very pleased from watching on the bench. And it was interesting as well, just because Maradona obviously used 20,000 different players in the qualification campaign for the World Cup. Argentina only have one friendly between now and their first game, so the team he sent out, you would presume, is pretty much going to be the team he sends out in South Africa. So he had Verona Mascherano in centre midfield, Gutierrez and Angel Di Maria on the wings.
Di Maria had a blunder. It was his brilliant ball over the top that sprung Higuain for that goal. Nice to see Maradona sharing the joy. He said, maybe the press... This game had the character of a World Cup quarterfinal, and this is the level we were looking for, he said. And maybe the press in Argentina won't like it, but we're going to play a very good World Cup. And, is that realistic?
It's not out of the question. They have great players, and if they can click, who knows what could happen. They've won 6 of their last 7. I mean, 5 of those games have been friendlies, but at least they're winning games.
Yeah.
Talking about Yogo Benito.
Yes.
Well, another practitioner of Yogo Benito in England at the moment is Sean O'Driscoll, the Doncaster Rovers manager, and they do play that type of football at their own level. And on Tuesday, as you know, Brazil played Ireland in their last friendly before the World Cup. Coincidentally, they also played Ireland in their last friendly before the World Cup in 1982, which, as we said, is the last time that Brazil played that type of football, the Yogo Benito football. On that occasion, they inflicted Ireland's worst ever defeat. They won 7-0. There were mitigating circumstances for Ireland because the FAI arranged a South American tour that included Argentina. So when the manager, poor hapless own hand, had to go around asking the English clubs to release players for this tour, they pointed out that Britain was at war with Argentina over the Falklands, so they wouldn't release them. I don't know what it says about Sean O'Driscoll, the fact that they did release him. He was playing for Fulham at the time. But he never played for Ireland before that, never played for them again, but it obviously made a lasting impression on him, and Doncaster Rovers fans are now reaping the rewards.
Now, one other thing about the match Wednesday at Wembley, of course, a minute silence and black armbands for the England players, although, Paul, as you were pointing out, not the subs, curiously, but this is following the death of Macclesfield manager Keith Alexander just after his side's 1-0 defeat at Notts County, and the tributes flooding in. I don't think any of us met Keith personally, but by all accounts, an absolutely remarkable man.
Well, yeah, by all accounts, a really nice guy. He was the first black manager, or full-time black manager in the Football League. He took over at Lincoln when he was age 34. In a further stint, he led them to 4 successive...
That was in 1993. How many have we had since?
I don't know. I mean, it's...
Paul Ince?
One of the sadder things about the fact is that because of his death, the number of black managers in the Football League has been halved. And when you consider there's 92 clubs, that's a pretty scary statistic. Mm. But he led Lincoln to 4 successive playoff campaigns. It wasn't successful in any of them, unfortunately. But he was operating on a shoestring. And I think one of his career highlights was he famously scored a goal for Grimsby in Plough Lane in 1989. It was at the height of the inflatable toy craze. And his goal prompted 5,000 inflatable haddock to be waved behind the goal at Plough Lane. So, it's sad that he's dying. He's such a young man as well. So,
Well, by all accounts, a smashing bloke. So, commiserations to everyone. And, of course, especially to the team, who I imagine are having this weekend's fixture rescheduled, although I'm not sure if there's any official word on that. Anyway, that's it for part one. Very, very shortly, we're going to be speaking to Sid Lowe in Spain.
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, another World Cup favourite, laying down a bit of a marker midweek, was, of course, Spain, with a 2-0 victory away to France. Let's get the reaction from our man Sid Lowe in Madrid to this. Before we do, a quick post from Webby Webster. Rubbish, says Webby Webster. After hearing the chaps explain the Sid Lowe bingo, I stopped the audio and then randomly chose some of my own keywords. And his rule is you have to have these words used before El Cid gets to the word rubbish. So the word rubbish effectively ends the game. So choose your words now as we join Sid Lowe for his roundup on all things Spaniolo.
Can I choose my word?
Yeah.
Hello.
Sid, how are you? Hello.
Good afternoon.
Sid, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. Now, let's start with Spain and another impressive performance from them. Their 34th win in the last 35.
It's ridiculous, this. I've actually written out a piece of paper with the stats on it to make sure I didn't forget them or get them wrong. Right, Spain have won 33 of their last 34 competitive games.
Oof.
Right? Back in February 2007... they beat England 1-0 with that goal from Andres Iniesta at Old Trafford. And since then, they've played 45 games, They've won 41 of them.
Crikey.
And they've won 24 of the last 25, 34 of the last 35, if of course you include beating Italy on penalties as a victory. It's just incredible, their run. It really is sensational. And last night, Vicente del Bosque actually said that he didn't think they played particularly well, that they needed to be more aggressive with the ball, that they needed to play with more intent, more kind of desire. But they still looked very, very comfortable against the French, and so much so that about halfway through the second half, the French started chanting olés as the Spanish played the ball around midfield, basically taking the piss out of the French players.
Maybe they were ordering coffee.
Maybe they were indeed, yes. Yeah. There's a lot of people offering Café au lait, isn't it?
But
there's kind of two sides to this in a way, in that it wasn't just that the French were having a go at the Spanish, by lauding the Spanish, they were also sticking their middle finger up at the French players. And the French fans last night, they booed Thierry Henry when he was taken off. They spent a lot of the game chanting for Dominic to resign. So I do think, you know, there's a slight twist in this, which is it's not only about saying, hey, Spain, you're brilliant. It was also about a way of saying to France, and look how rubbish you are compared to this lot. But Spain looked very, very comfortable again, and you only have to look at the players who are on the bench. You know, Navas didn't start, Xavi Hernandez didn't start, Fernando Torres didn't start, and you think to yourself, Christ, couldn't we do with players like that?
Paul, what's the reaction in France?
Pretty glum. Yep. Everyone's still very down on Dominic and down on the team. They keep today say that though Spain were obviously very good, France had a fragile defence, disjointed midfield and clueless attack, which amounts to a comprehensive failure, I'd say.
What's the latest, Paul, on the moves to oust Dominic?
Well, in addition to the fans calling for his head last night, obviously a politician has written to the Secretary for Sport this morning demanding state intervention ahead of the World Cup.
Any chance of this going through, do you think?
There has been suggestions that even within the French Federation, there are people who want to do that and try and persuade perhaps Laurent Blanc to do a Hiddink-type role at the World Cup.
Excellent. Sid, Coltrane, where are you, Sid?
I'm trying to hide from a main road. I've just been dropping some slides off at an archive, and I'm trying to get out the main road so that you can hear me, but it probably is still quite noisy.
Wow. That's one of those answers that raises more questions.
I've been dropping slides off at an archive. Woof.
What?
Woof. I mean, I've not even got Stella with me, but there's definitely a woof there.
Yeah, but what slides? Which archive?
It's the Regional Archive of Madrid, some slides from some photographs of political rallies in the 1930s.
Oh, is this
That's
to do with
really
your...
rock and roll, isn't it?
No, is this your kind of thesis related?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Oh, nice one. All right. Coltrane 27 posting in, wondering whether Jose Antonio Reyes could be a potential surprise element for Spain, as he is showing signs, as you said in your column, of getting his career back together, which is great news. Coltrane 27 also wondering, given the annoying commentary cliches that you have with England, i.e. Crouch has supposedly good touch, etc., so on, Beckham would play anywhere for the team, well, he's done nothing wrong tonight when referring to David James. What do they talk about with Spain's matches? They're so good, do they just say, we're surprisingly sublime tonight, even by our standards, for 90 minutes?
Well, here's a fantastic example of the almost a paucity of debate in Spain, because everything's going so well. Yesterday morning, one of the Catalan dailies did a big front page spread. It's an absolute disgrace that Victor Valdés won't go to the World Cup as Spain's third choice goalkeeper. Now, it's the biggest debate you can come up with is who your third choice goalkeeper is going to be, a guy who's almost certainly not even going to play in South Africa. I think that tells you how well settled things are. There are one or two other little debates. For example, the question mark over whether they should play four or five in midfield. And really, that tends to mean a straight face-off between Fernando Torres or Cesc Fabregas, which one of those two plays. So there's a little bit of a debate there. But really, things are so settled that there isn't much of a question mark. The 23 players who went to France yesterday are almost certainly going to be the 23 that go to the World Cup. And that means that Reyes, however well he's playing right now, and he is playing well, won't get in the squad. But then he's not the only one. There's lots of very, very good players in Spain who won't go. You look at Pedro at Barcelona, for example, he won't go. Pablo Hernandez, it looks like he's not going to go either. So yeah, of course, there's one or two little areas where people are questioning certain things. But it's not just that Spain are playing brilliantly. It's the stability that it's created around the squad. And everybody, of course, has forgotten about the big debate from a year or 18 months ago, and that was Raul.
Sid, can you think of a single England player who would get within an ass's roar of the Spanish squad?
Without any doubt at all, Ashley Cole would get in the Spain team at left back. I think that's certainly true. Beyond that, then it's very difficult. I mean, it's worth saying that the Spanish really do rate Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard. They think they're very, very good players. But the way that Spain play, not just the quality of the players, but the style in which they play, suggests that those two probably wouldn't have a place in the Spain starting 11. And then, of course, you've got Wayne Rooney. And I suppose, well, then you've got a question mark. Wayne Rooney, Fernando Torres, David Villa, pick one or two from three. Would Rooney get in? He may well be absolutely brilliant right now, but considering how well everything's functioning for Spain, perhaps he wouldn't even get in either. And Villa, by the way, and this is, I just think this is extraordinary as well, and it's another thing from my piece of paper that I wrote down from last night. Villa now has got 36 goals for Spain in 55 games. He's only 8 off Raúl's all-time total, and yet he's played almost 50 games fewer. And this is despite the fact that he started his career, for Spain at least, getting shunted out to left wing, only getting half an hour here and there, playing 60 minutes at most if he started. And now, you know, Wayne Rooney is brilliant, and Fernando Torres is brilliant, but I just still think that David Villa is probably the best striker in the world.
Well, excellent. Sid, fantastic stuff as ever. We look forward to hearing your reaction to those big games in the Liga on Monday.
OK, great.
Thanks, Sid. Far-ranging and broad-reaching pod today. France, just wanted to, since you're in, Paul, just wanted to ask you about the extraordinary scenes after a fixture that's caused trouble in the past, Paris Saint-Germain against Olympique Marseille. There were no visiting fans this time, but they still managed to riot and have a near fatality.
A near fatality, yeah, a guy is in a coma. This was two rival gangs, essentially, that constitute the PSG support. The Boulogne Boys is one section which has an element of white supremacist following in it. And Auteuil, which would be more cosmopolitan background, and they don't like each other. So there's, if you like, a sort of political friction between them, and then there's just basic gang friction over arguments starting over where they should stand in the terrace and things like that. And apparently this particular feud started 6 months ago when a member of the Boulogne group planted a Boulogne flag in the Auteuil section, and vengeance was sworn at the time. And was taken last Sunday.
Oh dear. It was 3-0 defeat for PSG at home to Marseille, which means it's incredibly tight now at the top of the league. You've got Bordeaux on 51 points, tied with Montpellier, newly promoted Montpellier. Lyon then 2 points behind. Marseille only a point behind them, so four teams within 3 points. Bordeaux, though, do have two games in hand. Just to conclude our international roundup, quick mention for Italy, who had a 0-0 draw with Cameroon. Nobody very impressed with this. Little Italy, in fact, was the headline on Thursday's Gazetta. And one or two debuts, a couple of young alternatives being brought in, or younger alternatives being brought in by Marcello Lippi. But all in all, not too impressive. But then, isn't that always the way with the Italians? Actually, no, it's not, because before the 2006 World Cup, they had some brilliant results. But anyway, yes, they're just about ticking along. Big weekend coming up in Italy, with Roma taking on Milan, Fiorentina taking on Juventus, and Inter, the leaders, against Genoa, who they'll probably destroy. But one of the big stories, you may have seen this, Barry, in the press. The new law that they brought, they're cracking down at last on one of the long-time problems of the Italian game, and I refer to blasphemy. It is now a red card offence to take the name of the Lord, any Lord, in vain. And last weekend we saw a couple of high-profile people falling foul of this, including the Chievo coach, Mimmo Di Carlo, who was sent off for this and has received a one-game suspension. He is appealing. Another player also in that game got done for this, but successfully appealed, because they used TV evidence. That's how seriously they take it. They got lip readers in, and he managed to argue that he wasn't making a reference to Dio, but a bloke called Diaz. So were they...
Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah, that would be another potential alibi. Why exactly Italy are suddenly devoting so much attention and indeed resources, so many resources to this particular issue, because there have been, you know, lip readers, etc., and people monitoring the games, etc., when there are some other very, very serious ills.
Do you have an explanation?
Is it a sign of the increasingly right-wing and reactionary stance of the Italian government and therefore... perhaps society, I don't know.
There's a famous incident, I think it was in Milan, when U2 were playing a gig there years ago, and they were being supported by this fantastic Irish band called the Fatima Mansions, whose lead singer was a guy called Cathal Coughlan. And Cathal Coughlan managed to enrage the entire nation of Italy by pretending to stick a statue of the Virgin Mary up his nether regions, And I think he had to be smuggled away from the gig in the boot of a car and spirited out of the country because he was going to be torn apart limb from limb. But I would imagine that also falls into the bracket of mild blasphemy.
I hope so. Hope so. In a second, let's get on to this week's post. On we go then. 681 posts, Barry. And none from yourself.
Are you going to read them all?
No. About 680 of them were endless debating of the Shawcross tackle on Ramsey. I'll just read one out. This is from Emmancien, who says, Jimbo, we all know you lot like a good pun. And my mate has come up with one that he can't stop going on about. His mate's pun is the following question. Did you see Ramsey's kick-shing nightmare last night? Well worked there, mate of Emmancien. Golikaki would like to contradict the impressions given of Craig Bellamy on the latest podcast. Golikaki was sitting at the same table as Bellamy at the Welsh Footballer of the Year a few years ago. It's a small intimate affair, I understand. And he said that Bellamy was charming, sober, polite and intelligent. Corollary here, though, his brother, however, is a knobhead who I booked within 5 minutes of his coming on in a lower division Cardiff Parks match a few years ago. Interesting. Cinque is another person supporting Bellamy and citing his philanthropic and charitable work in the summer.
What was he being roundly booed and hissed in the pod?
Well, somebody, and I'm not going to name names, but Sean did say that Bellamy wasn't a nice person. Barney was saying, you know, that he does find him quite fascinating. Roger Palmer would love to be part of a five-a-side team to play for the pod. He said he would drag his sorry ass out of retirement and over to London for it too. Barry, this is exciting. The five-a-side challenge, gauntlet, if you will, laid down by the Football Ramble. And it looks like this might actually take place now, this match.
It's a worrying development. They threw down the gauntlet at the start of the season, and I said that I would rather we took them on at pool and drinking pints, which I think we would be a lot better at. I happen to know for a fact that various football ramblers are very good at football, and various Football Weekly podcasters are not
right.
particularly good at football, apart from Sean Ingle, who isn't nearly as good as he says he is.
Right, but did play to a reasonably high standard.
But did play to a reasonably high standard until he popped his knee or something, and that's his story.
James Dark can play.
We could probably put a team out. Barney I won't Ray be on it, but I think you and I could possibly stand on the sideline and make sort of complicated hand gestures and stuff.
Right. I don't see why
smoke
not.
Smoke and drink.
A bit like those two in E17 who didn't actually do that thing. Yeah. Subsequently ran themselves over with their own cars and that. Which obviously isn't funny. Yeah. No. After that.
Sorry, I beg to differ. It was funny. Anyone running themselves over in their own cars.
Right.
Funny.
Okay. Meantime, the weekend. There's both FA Cup and Premier League this weekend in England. In the FA Cup, you've got your Fulham against Tottenham. Sven Skohornes posting in saying, our next five games are Tottenham, Juventus, Man United, Juventus again, and Man City. Big, big matches and games that will define their season, none of which involve relegation. And we're in March, says a delighted Sven Skohornes. As he also points out, they're a million miles away from the dark days of Sanchez with his two wins in over 20 matches, etc. They've come a long way, haven't they? The Cottagers.
Well, I mean, cliche, but terrific manager, you know, whose know-how is paying dividends. And if you keep on going like this, he should be a strong candidate for manager of the year.
And this despite a phenomenal injury list this season.
Yeah, I mean, his team picks itself. I think he's more or less said that. I just keep on going with the same players. It's it shows at a certain level that kind of there's not great pressure on Roy Hodgson, and he's wise, knows how to put a team together, and he's left in peace to get on with it. It's probably a nice level for him.
Reading, in the meantime, is taking on Aston Villa in around two. Any?
I think Reading will win this.
Do you? Very well.
I do indeed. They've scored 8 in their last two games. They've won 6 and drawn 1 of their last 8. And I reckon Villa will be a bit deflated and out of sorts after losing the Carling Cup final.
Yeah.
Reading are at home. I think Reading will win.
Cool, there you go. Portsmouth are hosting Birmingham. They're going to be facing them again straight afterwards next midweek in the league.
I've high to regard for Portsmouth players for, you know, continuing to play well in the face of all the off-field shenanigans they've had to contend with. I don't know how long it'll last. And, you know, Birmingham are a good good team as
to,
well.
To win an away game was incredible last week, wasn't it, Portsmouth? Yeah. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, Burnley, who had a terrific home record, although much of that was, of course, under the previous manager. The other game this weekend in the FA Cup, Chelsea against Stoke. Now, I mentioned before, you're going to that, Kevin. Yeah, a lot of Chelsea fans do seem to think that the Chelsea monolith is crumbling a bit. NY 1703, Ancelotti is not all that. His Champions League wins on his CV are as misleading as Michael Owen's European Player of the Year award from 2001. Has he added to or taken away from what Hiddink left him? Woodison says that they're not progressing under Carlo equally. Lampard's not the player he was under past managers. Terry looks clueless at the moment. There's a real lack of ideas. When the big players don't play well, I think they're struggling. It does bear mentioning that they are without Pedacek. Yeah. Michael Essien and world's best left back, etc., Ashley Cole.
To get back to John Terry, people were talking as if he had some sort of renaissance last night for England. It wasn't too bad, but it was nothing like the John Terry we've seen in times gone by. I mean, when you saw him being beaten for speed, it's probably because his concentration has always been slow. But last night, his concentration is probably not good enough to be in the right position at the right time to stop that happening in the first place. I mean, he's always been great at disguising his flaws. I mean, you know, he's not a great footballer, he's not quick, but obviously he's learned his trade. But I think his concentration is still very suspect.
Mm. Is there any word that he's going to get his haircut finished before Saturday?
It's the Travis Bickle look.
Yeah, it's a great haircut to get. You know, when you're in the public eye, people don't like you. Yeah, I'll get a Travis Bickle.
They're at home, as I say, to Stoke.
Stoke have only lost one of their last 12.
Yes,
and we'll give them a game. I'd imagine. Would not be a surprise at all if Chelsea lost that.
There you go. Well, meantime, in the Premier League, Wolves are home to Man United. All sorts of exciting talk about City financiers here.
The Red Knights.
The Red Knights.
It's like Monty Python and the Search for the Holy Grail, or a chapter of the Hell's Angels are going to come in and rescue them. Now, we were talking about this before podding today, and I think the only way, you know, United's fans can wave green and gold scarves till the cows come home. It's the Glazers won't give a hoot about it. If Liverpool and Manchester United really want to make a protest against their horrible American owners, they should boycott the game at Old Trafford on the 21st of March. But you reckon, there doesn't seem to be any chance of that happening, but I think if they're serious about it, they should take one for the team and just boycott the game.
My point wasn't that they shouldn't boycott it, it was just that you couldn't call them stupid for not boycotting it, given that the very reason that they're involved in this struggle is that they love and support this team and have an emotional connection with this team, and therefore it's a massive sacrifice for them to not turn up.
But
to one of the biggest games of the season.
It could go down as one of the famous protests, and they'd be able to say, I wasn't there.
Would it have an impact at the on the Glazers, do you think?
It would have an impact, because Sky cameras would be there at an empty ground.
Yeah.
This match between, huge game between two teams, no supporters there. No supporters, okay, they'll have already paid for their season tickets, but they won't be eating overpriced burgers, they won't be drinking overpriced beer, they won't be reading overpriced programmes. Mm. And it would really send a statement around the world that Liverpool, Manchester United played in a really important league match and there was nobody at it.
Mm, but if the Glazers, as some suggest, are just a group from Florida who don't actually care about football and are really only interested in taking the $250 million and counting that they have so far out of United's coffers, will it really make any difference to them?
Yeah, because you're hitting them in the pocket.
Mm. I don't. I mean, I think you'd have to have something far more drastic, like people not renewing season tickets.
Right.
In large numbers.
When is that's coming up soon, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, but the trouble is, people say there's plenty more people on the waiting list who will go and buy them. I mean, but if you really wanted to move the Glazers, that would do it. But you would do damage to the club in the process, and you would have to accept that. But the Red Knights thing baffles me. By the way, I was asking a Man U fan last night who's a journalist. He said, "Well, you know, if about 40 people put in $25 million each." I thought, you mean they could just put in $25 million and not want it back? I think if a club costs $1 billion, incidentally, the Glazers would want more than $1 billion. But if a club costs $1 billion, the people that pay for that will definitely want a return on their money.
Mm. Well, the Red Knights apparently are going to make an announcement or some sort of press conference, I think, tomorrow.
Are they nice to say ni?
I'm not sure, Barry. Perhaps that will
what
inform.
What do they say?
Perhaps they'll be asking for a shrubbery. Who knows? And that brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Very Extra. We'll be back on Monday with a review of all of that Premier League and Cup action. Hopefully you'll be joining us then. In the meantime, it's the usual big, big thank you to producer Pete, who should, as opposed to a mention, have some sort of klaxon or horn that he could go wah, wah, at this point or something. Paul Doyle, he's waving though, listeners, he's waving. Bye, James. Bye, Kevin McCarra.
Thanks, James.
Thank you. And Barry Glendinning.
Thanks.
Thanks, Barry. Speech on Monday. Have a lovely weekend.
Football Weekly Extra from The Guardian in association with sportingbet.com.